Hare Krishna.
Sitting here tonight with
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Welcome back. It's again Tuesday night, and we are talking about Vaishnava relationships, and that's why every week I'm bringing part of the wealth of the jewels and gems of the Alachua community to talk about Vaishnava relationships. So we have a relational program every week. And with us today we have none other than Madan Mohan.
Hare Krishna.
Who is my godbrother, and we go back for many years in the early 70s in Los Angeles. And Madan Mohan has incredible mind. He's called a Muni. Muni is one who can think in many different ways about one thing and look at it in many different ways. And he has such an incredible mind that you have to be extremely alert to follow the nuances and intricacies of his understanding of the subject. But if you don't understand, you can always ask questions. So, having said that, of course, we're talking about relationships, and I would like to start tonight's session by welcoming all of you, and any of you who would like to come on to chat, you can click the chat button below the picture, and then you can join us by commenting, asking questions, and if you're on chat, you can read the comments of the others, because as we're talking, often there are comments and realizations, but most of which I read, but you can participate and follow along. So thank you all for coming. So I have many quotes from Srila Prabhupada, which I would like to read, and that will help continue the themes which we've been talking about. And here's one. You have dedicated your life for Krishna, and therefore you should be ideal. That means you, that means Madan Mohan, and also me, and everybody else. You should be ideal. That's kind of a tall order, isn't it? Especially when you have high ideals, the high ideal of Bhagavatam, of pure devotional service. So.
Prabhupada once mentioned, he said that Krishna conscious means you be a perfect gentleman.
Yes.
So,
and a perfect gentleman means a perfect saint, perfect sadhu, who follows perfectly what Krishna wants us to do. So, we all have a tall order from Srila Prabhupada to be ideal, as far as we can be ideal, to be a perfect gentleman in Krishna consciousness. We are introducing Krishna consciousness movement for the harmony and goodwill of humanity. But if you yourselves are suffering from the very ills we are trying to remove, how can the people be influenced favorably? Stop this fighting. This was in response to devotees fighting. Even devotees fight. Even when we come to the so-called spiritual platform and dedicate our life to Krishna, still, we're not perfect. Works in progress. But we're ripening, and therefore there was a lot of fighting. And does anyone remember what Prabhupada said, why we fight? Prabhupada said we fight because, who remembers? We're testing you all out there from the last class, or a few classes. He said the reason you're fighting is because you all want to be, and it starts with a G and it ends with a D. The problem is you all want to be God. In case you didn't know that, of course, if you read Bhagavad Gita, you already know that. Yes. Thank you, Mitra. Of course, I don't think we consciously think, do we, that we want to be God, or do you think like that?
No. But the nature of the false ego is, it's different than the real ego. The real ego is femininely submissive to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And as it comes into the material world, it gets the gender change into the masculine role of being the controller, dominator, and an enjoyer. And that's its false identity. So another name for the false ego would be thinking you're God.
And it's interesting because we may have that ego and at the same time be very, quote-unquote, religious or spiritual. Not really spiritual, let's say religious. We want to be God, we want to control, we want honor and so forth. And so therefore there's friction. So we could say in that sense, being ideal is not wanting to be God, but being taking a more humble.
Servant.
Is that the good word?
Yeah.
You like the word out there, humble? It's too hard to be humble, right? Try to be humble. Practice humility. Okay.
Isn't humility a byproduct, though?
Of?
Knowing your position, knowing Krishna, your process of knowledge, the first item is humility.
Yeah.
When sees the situation, understands the purpose of this world, and by just seeing the purpose of this world and understanding what their function is here and being become purified, they naturally, byproduct starts to develop humility.
Theoretically, yes.
Well, then you need an opportunity to practice something that will make it from theoretical to real. And that's what our friends are for.
And our spouses.
There's our topic.
Also, guru is meant to chastise.
Yes.
We heard, this disappearance day, we heard some stories of one devotee, Shankar, was telling us how he was chastised by Prabhupada. One time he was cooking with another devotee, and I guess Prabhupada didn't like what they were making, and Prabhupada said, "Who made this?" And they said, "We did, Prabhupada." And he said, "These are terrible. You always mess everything up." So that was a special mercy. And then the same devotee went and bought some oranges. Saw these oranges. They looked really good. So he bought like a whole case or two or three or a whole cartload. And then they were on a morning walk, and he got chastised for buying the oranges because Prabhupada said, "Those oranges have been in the freezer for 6 months."
But I remember the story once when this young child, because I was in Gurukula for a while, and was chastised by Prabhupada, and he responded back with a answer.
Whoa.
So Prabhupada said, "He's not a gentleman." So that there's our animal propensities are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So when those propensities are in check, the defending propensity gets removed quite a bit, so that humility is also there. He can see Krishna's hand in the situation, and he, as we're saying, being a gentleman, he was humble and he didn't respond back.
Have you ever heard the definition, humility means reality? What you were just saying, that knowledge, from knowledge of our position comes humility. So the saying humility means reality is that we're insignificant. And so that's the reality.
I share one idea I've had on that too. I don't use the word humble in my condition anymore. I use the word humbled.
Yes.
That in every situation, if you see me humble, it's not that I'm humble. It's that I've been humbled by the mercy of Krishna.
You know, in the Bible, it says, don't judge, lest you be judged. It's very interesting what it says in the Bible. It says, if you forgive, you'll be forgiven. If you bless, blessed are the blessed. If you bless, you'll be blessed. What else? Forgive.
Blessed be the peacemakers.
If you forgive, you'll be forgiven. If you bless, you'll be blessed. Anybody know? Is there a third one?
Show mercy.
Yeah. Oh, you show mercy. Yeah. And then they go to the negatives. If you judge, then you're going to be judged. If you condemn,
same standard.
You're going to be condemned. It's like this karma. We were talking in previous courses about how often when you criticize someone, the very fault that you find in them comes back and haunts you. So you become judged by the standard, the very thing that you've been judged. So we see that sometimes You know, we always say, using the example of the gopis, how Krishna humbled them by leaving them because they thought they had him in their hand. And then we use that example to say that Krishna will always humble the devotee if the devotee becomes proud, because Krishna doesn't like pride. He doesn't like to be around pride. And have you ever noticed that if you're around proud people, you also don't like it? Who would you rather be around? Someone who's humble or someone who's proud? You ever have that experience of being around a proud person and you feel uncomfortable or somewhat uneasy or just distasteful? So Krishna is the same as we are, or we're the same as he is. He doesn't like it either. And humility really, we are attracted to people who are humble, and Krishna is also attracted to people who are humble. And sometimes he helps us become attractive by humbling us,
giving us that opportunity to see. I was thinking on those points that you're making. One of the aspects that I found when read that in the Bible, that it didn't have the central figure of the super soul. And I found, to add that element in there of real knowledge, that each person has relationship with Krishna. And that's the primary relationship. So we're to assist each other in establishing and having the person act in the correct relationship with Krishna. So if you act kindly to someone, that's the same thing that the super soul always acts kindly. And it's,
so in other words,
watering the root.
A representative of Krishna, you represent his nature to others.
Well, you did ask for that high ideal, saksat hari twena, to have the qualities. You develop the qualities of whatever you serve in 1:2:17, I think it is, the verse of Bhagavatam.
Mahat sevam.
Yes.
Serve the mahat.
Oh,
forget.
Mahat, there you go.
All of you remember this verse. It's a very important verse. It's mahat sevam. This comes up twice. That's the fifth canto. There's another verse about serving the mahatmas. So it says if you serve the mahatmas, then
a great service is done. And Prabhupada points out, you take on...
Don't forget who to serve. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
You take on the qualities of whom you're serving. So it says a great service is done, and you'll get an affinity for it. Hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna. So that's one, and you'll develop this urge to hear his message. So that will be... that takes you to the next stage in your Krishna consciousness, hearing, and Krishna removes the dirty things from your heart. So it's always interacting with Krishna that we are enabled to be able to have those qualities. Those aren't exactly our qualities. We're borrowing them from who we're serving. So by serving, by remembering the great soul and offering that situation, then, which becomes a habit in training. After you do it for a while, it's natural.
Well, it's also this other principle that Prabhupada taught that goes along with that out of affection for serving a great devotee, that you want to represent what he's teaching. You want to be an example of what he's teaching to others. So it may be in the form of practice. Maybe you don't have those qualities, but oftentimes Prabhupada said, you understand a guru by his disciples. And people, he said, your acting properly glorifies me. And he brought us to India in the early 70s, and he wanted to show us to the Indians, because by showing us, if we act properly, that glorifies him. The Prabhupada said, they will ask, you are so nice, who is your spiritual master? So both representing Krishna and representing what Srila Prabhupada taught us. And
it's very nice.
And then also your point in being aware, being conscious that if Krishna loves us, if Krishna wants to purify us, and we are sincere and want that, then if we are deviated, he will do what's necessary to cut us down to size. So, and that's kind of and that's a big fear people have, shameful.
He reminds us. There's this one quote from a BTG. It says, the conclusion is based on proper understanding the difference between the jiva and the paramatma, the individual soul and the Supersoul. The individual soul is forever servant of the Supersoul, and therefore his relationship with the Supersoul is to offer service. This is called Bhakti Yoga or Bhakti Bhava. So, and each time we offer respects to each other in devotee relationships, and that's recognizing also that the Supersoul is there. So
seeing the Supersoul?
Yeah, so...
So how do you explain that? That's always been a... Like, I don't know if you all know, but a practice we have in our temples every morning is to offer respects to the other devotees. Like, all the devotees together in the temple will pay obeisances to one another and chant a mantra which offers respects to Vaishnavas. And then Prabhupada said, well, actually, we're respecting that the Supersoul is in the heart. So it almost sounds like, well, I have no respect for you, but I respect the Supersoul sitting in your heart, but you're just a bum, but I'll bow to you. So can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, one way that I've dealt with this is in a... if you went into a hospital and you saw someone lying in the bed, one of your friends, and he says, you got to help me. They're not letting me eat any ghee, any sweets, any salt. All they give me is this bland food. I'm just dying here. So you say, oh, sure. So you go make some pakoras, some halva, sweet rice, and make him a nice feast plate, and you're bringing it in, and he's all excited to get it. And as he's reaching for it, the doctor walks in, and he says, what are you doing? This will kill him. He says, I'm personally, he's under my care, and I'm taking care of him. And even though he may want these aren't good for him right now. When he was healthy, you can give him them. But for right now, it's not. So we offer respects because to the Supersoul, because we see that now that he's surrendered to the spiritual master, he's coming under the control of the internal potency. It's not karma anymore. He's under direct doctor supervision. And they're having a... direct treatment is going on. So we have to offering respects to the doctor whose care the patient is under also. If you don't see the doctor...
What about the non-devotees?
The non-devotees...
We don't offer respects.
You offer respects because Krishna is also in their heart, but it's a little bit more indirect because they're not consciously aware of the... It's tough love in material world is the tough love of God, which means there's love there, but it's not being recognized. So when one starts to recognize it, he becomes a little bit more sober, and his heart starts to change, how everything is being done with great loving attention. But when one is very young, he says, why can't I go out and play? I hate you. Why are you always restricting me? But when he grows up, he says, thank you so much. You saved me from being a whimsical person.
So, respect. It's an important topic as a relational strategy or quality. And the problem I'm having is, it seems like, okay, I should respect because the Supersoul is there. But I'm not seeing the Supersoul. I'm just seeing how you are behaving, and if you can run a mile in 3 minutes, I'll have great respect for you. If you can lift 600 pounds, I'm like, wow. Right? If you can recite 100 shlokas in a minute for the next 3 hours, I'll think, wow, then I respect you. But if you don't come up to a certain level of what I consider good or honorable, it becomes more difficult to respect you because I'm not seeing the Supersoul in you. I'm just seeing you. And I forget that the Supersoul is in your heart. So how do we get beyond this idea where it's easy to respect someone if they have qualities which are respectable to you? And it's difficult to respect someone if they don't, or especially if they act in ways which you consider lacking morality or integrity or spiritual values.
Well, sometimes I call this the Prakriti Bhakta predicament. Because if you're seeing the person as the body, then that's still the mode of passion. And in a mode of passion, it has a tendency to absorb you. So Prabhupada had written in Krishna's Reservoir of Pleasure that in the mode of goodness, it allows you a separate place to see the mode of passion without being in it. Hmm. It's still there, it's still acting, but you have one other spot where you can see it as opposed to being absorbed in it. So when you're seeing it, not absorbed in it, they call that the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, you can see five things, and the Bhagavad Gita points out. You can see that there's Krishna who's doing, orchestrating everything. You can see the living entity. You can see material nature and eternal time, and one that's temporary is karma. So you had mentioned Christ earlier. He had a very nice way of saying it. He says, you hate the sin, not the sinner. So he gave a Brahminical perspective by saying that, that there's two. There's the soul and the situation. So yes, you can dislike the behavior, but they have to feel your affection in liking them. Like Prabhupada, when he would chastise people, you could still feel that he who's lovingly chastising you, not meaningly chastising you.
So
that's subtle.
So it seems like you're saying that on the platform that we're asked to respect people, it has nothing to do, at least people in general, has nothing to do with who they are in terms of what we'd normally respect. And it only has to do in terms of the fact that here's a living entity, he's part of Krishna, Krishna's in his heart, and therefore, as part of Krishna, that's the part we see. We don't see the parts we don't like, or even the parts we'd like, because wouldn't you say it's also kind of a false form of respect just to respect someone because they have some good karma? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's like if I respect someone because they have certain qualities, I'm going to disrespect others.
Well, I've noticed the more that someone sees karma is because he's in karma. And if he sees karma separate, it's because he's also separating himself from it. Mm-hmm. So we do know in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a couple verses like Pandita Samadarshan, which is a benediction that Krishna gives for when he's pleased in your devotion, that you can see all the living entities as part and parcels. There's one verse, since you're talking about devotees, that are, it says, when one has a spiritual master, which is Acharya Van Purusho Veda, that if one has a Acharya, he knows things as they are. Right. So in the Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter, 34 and 35, it says, after you approach a spiritual master, he'll tell you the truth of how to sacrifice, how to run your life. And he says, you'll know that all beings are in me and are mine. And he says, even if you're the most sinful person, if you have this knowledge, you can cross over the ocean of miseries and enjoy the self with you.
Okay, so what I would say is, okay, I'm not on the platform yet, so now I have to adjust it, because I've seen the truth through knowledge, but when I forget, I don't see it. So then it seems that I have to do a practice, like all the time, reminding myself, all right, I am supposed to respect everyone, and I'm not supposed to walk around thinking, well, I'm better, smarter, more talented, more this or that than other people, at least.
Is it important to you to develop that quality?
I think it's important to everybody.
Okay, so if you wanted, suppose someone says, I want to become a doctor. I'm ready to start operating today. They say, you better not operate today. You don't know what you're doing. He said, but there's a course. He said, well, is it like 2 weeks? How long is it going to take before I can start operating? He says, well, if you really want to do it, there is this course. He says, well, a month, 6 months? He says, well, first you have to be qualified. Then there's these 4 years, and then there's another 8 years.
Well, why can't I just practice it?
Quacks.
Why can't I just practice seeing? I mean, what am I supposed to see? What Krishna says.
Well, if it's important to you, then there is a procedure that you go through. So you're saying that you're Abhideya. The Vedas are divided into three categories by all the Vaisya to know Krishna. So he divides.
I just wanna learn how, in my conditioned stage, because Lord Chaitanya says you should respect all living entities. In my condition, he says here.
So you're in the swimming pool and you want me to throw you a towel to dry off?
No. Lord Chaitanya says, here's the holy name, and this is how you chant.
All right.
He said, you chant in a humble state of mind. He didn't say, you chant, and don't worry about the humble state of mind. It'll come later. He said, no, you chant now in a humble state of mind. So then the question is, okay, I'm not humble, but I have to develop the humble state of mind. Can I give an analogy? If I don't have the spiritual vision, then I have material vision, which forces me to act materially.
So this material world is called Durga. It's like a prison house. So if you went into a prison house and you said, oh, my dear sir, I see you're on death row, you only have a little bit of time left. What did you do wrong?
Nothing.
Okay. Well, if you did anything wrong, you got caught. That was something. Okay. So now you have somebody, you ask them, you're going to go out for parole. So they say, okay, I see you've been serving time for how long have you been in the material world? How long? Since time immemorial, right? Okay. What have you done wrong?
Got caught.
Well, you're not ready for parole then. Come back next year. So there's a question that at some point in time, one comes to confront his heart and he thinks, have I done anything wrong? Why am I here in this material world? Am I doing anything wrong?
Right.
Why haven't I been able to get out? Now, when that transition takes place, one can chant the holy name in a humble state of mind.
So then you're saying you can't actually go out and artificially respect people, but first you have to...
You can, but it's artificial.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that you understand your position. You see your own past sinful activities, your own the qualities that you have, not the qualities, the defects that you have in yourself. And at that point, you'll naturally show respect to others because you know who you are, where you're at. Is that what you're saying? Otherwise, you can't really do it.
At some state, someday, the opportune moment will come. Sometimes we say, jeev jago, gora chandrabole. Wake up to the sleeping soul. So when we begin devotional service, it's not very clear to get the perspective of what actually we're getting involved with. We're just extremely fortunate. But at some stage, at some time, however long it takes, one starts to understand a little bit. So that's a change that takes place.
Right. Well, we understand. I mean, we understand it. It's there. It's given to us. This is who we are. This is what we've done.
So you have sambandha. But what was the other two? Sambandha abhideya.
So I have the knowledge. But I think part of it is also, okay, I don't always think it's just a question of years of practice. I think we may not want to accept the fact that we're fallen souls or we're not, you know, as great as we think we are. I mean, the whole guilt comes from not being able to accept my actions are different from my self-conception. So we may come to Krishna consciousness with the self-conception that I'm up here, and then Shastra, scripture says, and other people may say, actually, you're down here, and it's too difficult to accept that I'm down here. That just like deflates my ego, my self-conception to such a degree that I have to remain up here because this is where I think I am. And
you don't get out much, huh? When you see other
people. Well, I can protect myself. I can act in a way where I'm very careful about what I do to maintain my own self-conception, my own pretension. You know, there's a saying...
Donkey yarn.
There's a saying, Raghunath Das Goswami said, pride is like bathing in donkey urine. There's this idea of people who want to feel spiritual but don't want to act spiritual. You heard that? Ridhananda Maharaj was once talking about self-esteem, feeling good about yourself. And he said, well, if you're a murderer, you're going around killing people, it wouldn't be a good thing to feel good about yourself, would it?
Well, unless you have like a Robin Hood complex. These people deserved it. I did a world a great favor. It's just a shame that you haven't recognized that quality.
So in general, though, those killers are not coming. So he made a point that I appreciated. He said, if you want to feel good about yourself, then act in a good way. And then you'll feel good about... So some people want to feel good about themselves. I want to feel spiritual. But they're reluctant to act spiritually. So I think it's a similar thing, you know, where we have this... You know, the great devotees, they talk about how fallen they are. And we read that and we go, well, I don't understand what they're saying. How could they say this? They're so exalted. And they're telling us, well, actually, you're that fallen. You just don't want to admit it.
What are you serving time for? What are you in for? At a certain point in time. Okay. If the punishment fits the crime.
Wait a minute. We have to go back so everybody understands. If you're following... We're in the material world. The material world is a prison. What are we serving time for?
Yes.
We're serving time for impersonation. What's that crime? Impersonating someone, right?
Oh, that's a nice point. You impersonated God.
Yeah, we're serving time for impersonating God.
Was it?
What?
Pandraka.
Yeah.
So Krishna said, you're a catch.
That story. You know this story in Bhagavatam of Pandraka? It's this total riot. He glued on two extra arms. And the arms were flapping around and he saw Krishna. And he was chastising Krishna for imitating him. So he's like the personification of the crime.
So he played a game of frisbee. He said, here, catch. The Sudarsan chakra.
Yeah.
Didn't work. So that's one element. But another element is...
What are we serving time for? What else?
If the punishment fits the crime... Like if a 5-year-old took a piece of gum from a five and dime store and they gave him 30 years in jail, you'd say that's not right.
Okay.
So if we're here serving 8,400,000 consecutive death sentences more than once, maybe we did something.
Maybe we're still doing something.
So the most merciful, the... most wonderful. In fact, today I just had a little derivation on a word that just struck me. It's just wonderful. I read, you know how we always read Krishna is the supreme person. So, su is a superlative, which means like very or the greatest, you know, suridam, best friend. And what's the second part of supreme? If you spell it
P-R-E-M-E.
So he's topmost prema. So I was saying, yes, supreme means Krishna has a topmost prema. Of course, we know Radharani.
Okay, so...
What have you done that this with the topmost loving person has put you in a situation that we've been suffering millions and millions of births, and we don't even have a clue? Is that someplace that...
Stolen identity. I stole God's identity. Well, what is okay? So I've stolen God's identity, and now.
But he's not just when you say God, it means one thing. But how about he's your best friend?
I'm on this respect thing.
Okay, but he's your best friend. So your very best love.
He's my best friend. I stole his identity. Why does he care?
I said, okay, come over my house. I said, you're my friend. Whatever's mine is yours. Make yourself at home. So I come back about an hour later, and you have a U-Haul truck backed up to my house, and you're loading everything in.
Including your wife.
And I'm saying, what are you doing? And you said, well, you said everything is mine is yours and help myself. So I'm loading everything up. And I said, well, that's not exactly what I meant. So
okay.
Has there been a violation in this original friendship?
All right.
There has been.
So.
What is it?
The problem that I want to focus on is that I've got this identity theft problem, and now I'm somewhat like Pondraka, thinking that, well, I know I'm not God, but on a subconscious level I don't know that, which makes it difficult to respect other people because I'm thinking, I'm thinking they're not God, but I am God.
I have to just interject one more time that the idea when you say identity theft, that's one degree of problem, of intensity that, okay, you got someone's name off the internet, but it wasn't your best friend. You took your best friend's.
I don't think he cared.
No, he does. He loves you.
It was like he was so cool, I wanted to be like him.
Well, imitation that. But
no, I liked him. I just thought, I want to do what he's doing.
He says,
everything
belongs to him, but you're saying it's yours
problem,
now.
But the problem is,
mine.
The problem is, however I see him, there's this innate desire still to compete with him. So I understand what you're saying.
You're not winning much.
You're saying...
I haven't seen...
You know what Prabhupada said? Someone said... somebody said, what is Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada said, Krishna is great. You're not great. Therefore, you're not God. That is Krishna consciousness. So, all right.
You got that?
So I'm understanding.
So you're humble.
I understand that. Okay, I understand. I'm not great. Krishna's great. But it doesn't mean that I don't have the desire. This latent desire is still there. And so what I'm getting at is this, you know, we were talking about respect, why it's so hard to respect. I have to adjust, I have to remind myself, respect this person, even though I see them less than me. And then you see, you have these stories of devotees who are seeing everybody greater than them. But these very exalted devotees, and they're actually seeing people greater than them. They're feeling so humble, so unworthy. So it seems that unless we come to that position, there's no question of humility and therefore no real genuine respect, even though we'll namaste, we offer that respect. But we may be offering respect to look good. So people think, hey, he's respectful, he's humble.
Right? Yeah, I'm very proud of my humility.
Right, yeah. And I make sure that everybody knows that I'm humble. I go out of my way to make sure everyone knows that I'm humble.
I had a flashing red button that said, I'm humble, but the battery wore out.
I'm proud to be humble, yeah.
Yeah, so one can act in any capacity, but at a certain point, it doesn't satisfy one. Just like the difference between a mirage and water, they have almost all the same qualities. They're only missing a couple things. They still get you excited. It still has hope. It looks the same. And that's the mode of passion. It looks like this friendship. It looks like this relationship will work. But it's only missing the two elements, reality and satisfaction. Because the nature of this desire to have friends, this is natural because you have a friendship with Krishna. But unless you rectify that one first, the other ones won't exactly work either. They stay in the mirage, in the mode of passion, without seeing the reality.
So are you saying that in this world, people don't have good relationships who aren't God conscious? That they're not possible?
No, for a fact that...
I know a lot of people, like my in-laws, they've been married for who knows how long, 50 years, and devotees, you know, 3-4 years, divorce. And my in-laws are pretty agnostic.
time will have those two separate.
But they have a good relationship.
Apparently. Yeah, it does.
Depends how you define relationship. But I want you to, I want to stay on course here. You said something this morning, that every devotee can offer some. What was your statement? Every devotee offers us.
When Dina Bandaprabhu was here, he said, when you see a devotee, you should feel happy.
Right.
So if that actually happens at a certain point, then every time you see a devotee, he adds something in your life.
Right.
Krishna
right.
has arranged, this is a nice point, if you, I say that love gives attention to detail. So Krishna has such detail in everyone's life, and we don't notice, but every single person that's in our life is in there with a reason. And there's something that Krishna has having us in the relationship for our benefit with
so,
that person.
So your point is every devotee enriches us in some way if we can see it. So, okay. So hold that point, everyone. Keep that in your mind, because now we're going back to respect. And, okay, I'm not humble yet, right? I'm working on it. I'm like floating up here. I should be down here. But one thing that can spark that humility is that statement, to see something that someone has that I don't have. So that all of a sudden puts that person, at least to some degree, above me in some way, because there's something I can get from them. And I think that's true also with non-devotees. You can see. Mm-hmm. What can I learn from? Even what could you learn from Saddam Hussein? You know, he'll do something stupid, and so I could learn from that.
But who sets it up for it to be in your central perspective?
Yeah, of course.
Krishna sets this up, and he set it up with a reason. So we not only see the other person, but we're seeing Krishna setting it up. So the all respect has to do with, because Lord Chaitanya says one should offer all respect. He doesn't say little.
Mm-hmm.
So what's all with respect as opposed to different gradations of respect? What's a little respect? What's more respect? But what's all respect? Is that they're part and parcel of Krishna?
Well,
there's one other and wonderful point.
You asked me a question.
I'm sorry.
I was going to answer it. Part of all respect means not for me. You say, you know, like we say, all glories. You know, in Krishna consciousness, we say, all glories to all the Vaishnavas, or all glories to Prabhupada. So that means no glories for me and all for them. So all respects means all. I respect others and not sit around looking at myself like, I'm so great, I'm so wonderful. Of course, some people need to do that, because if they don't, they'll kill themselves because they have no self-respect or self-love. So it's, you know, we have to distinguish that also. But you're...
Well, the point that I was... we're trying to remember was in Bhagavatam 10.14.7, prayers by Lord Brahma.
Everyone knows that verse, right? 10.14.7?
You'd have to look it up. I actually only know part of the purport, but the gist of the verse was that Krishna has unlimited qualities, and even if they can count all the grains of sand, and they count every molecule of sunshine, they still can't count all the qualities that Krishna has. And in a purport, Santan Goswami pointed out that Krishna has one quality for each jiva soul, for each soul, special. In other words, the love that's between you and Krishna, he can't get the love that you can give him
Amazing.
From anybody else. So that makes you so special.
Wow.
Because...
did you hear that out there?
Mm-hmm.
You're all special. That's probably the best thing you've heard since you came to the material world.
Very special, because
we all have a special something we can offer to Krishna. That's
your love. And Krishna can't get your love from anybody else.
Wow.
So Radharani, who's very dear to Krishna, is always trying to get someone to be with Krishna, because Krishna expanded himself as you for his pleasure
nice.
Of enjoying the love that you can give him.
So that way we can respect everyone because they have something special to offer our Lord.
And then it's nirmatsaran satam.
Non-envious.
Which is what we're talking about, how to have a relationship that's non-envious. And then the threefold miseries exist no longer. And one of those threefold miseries is the adibhautiks, which is where relationships come in.
Miseries caused by other entities.
And therefore, he's my enemy. And when one lives with love in his heart, then he develops certain qualities and he sees everything one way. And when he lives without love in his heart, he has another set of qualities. He's harsh, he's short, he doesn't have any many nice qualities. So what is that when you make up, if you made up a chart, this is what life is like when I don't feel love, and this is what life is like when I do. So we want to keep the love present. And then if you do, you see, those are the 26 qualities of the devotee. That when they, when you're able, like sometimes they say, what does Krishna, if you touch fire, it feels hot. If you touch something cold, it feels cold. So what does Krishna feel like? Sat Chit Ananda. So if you touch Sat Chit Ananda, what do you feel? Sat Chit Ananda, which happens to be your eternal nature. That's what you're made of. Hey, let's see what you're made of. All right, touch Krishna.
You know what chit means? Chit means knowledge. Madan Mohan is full of chit.
How to love Krishna, because knowledge means bhakti mama bijana.
Okay, let's stay on. We're going to come back down. So I'm trying to learn how, because if I can respect, this is such an important point in relationships, if I can respect, if I can, because we're always seeing the things we don't like.
I got a good one on respect.
But see, we're seeing the things we don't like, and you're talking about how each devotee has something they can offer us. And Chandakapandit says, you can take filth, gold from a filthy place. In other words, there's so much you can get from so many people. There was one, you know the story? The Prabhupada was ill, and they called up a doctor. I think it was Memorial Day or something. There were no doctors. And one doctor came, and the doctor walked in. He was drunk. And he just looked at Prabhupada and said, tell the old man to walk every day. And Prabhupada started walking from this old drunk doctor. So, you know, you can learn from everyone. So you can respect. You see something good in everyone and think, how can I be inspired? Sometimes you go to a store and someone be cleaning the windows. And you might think, he's doing such a good job cleaning windows. I should do that good a job in Krishna service.
So if you're happy, you can see like that.
So I was going to say, yeah, that's a good point, because I was going to say that I've noticed that people who have those good qualities tend to see it in others, just as people tend to see their faults in others, they see their good qualities in others. So it seems to also go along with that.
Well, respect also enables a conduit of communication, that when you don't respect someone, there's, you can't transfer the good qualities so well. So like there's that commandment to honor your parents. So one of the statements of Prabhupada said is that the love that a mother has for a child is the closest thing to spiritual love. So you could say it in another way, is the love your mother has for you is second only to God's. Which sounds nice. So when it says honor your parent, it was so if you respect them, the conduit can be established where that love of how she's doing things can actually be transferred to you. And since the whole material creation is a type of love rehab, where the principle is to learn how to get it right and then you can leave. You know, so we're here to learn what we forgot. At one time it's so easy, but now just to do a little something is sometimes so difficult.
So we're learning to be, we're in rehab, learning to love, and respect is fundamental.
Because then you can pick it up from so many places. As soon as you respect somebody, there's a communication where you can assimilate their the loving affection. That there's a lot of that around that we don't pick it up, even from people who love us, because we don't have enough respect. So therefore, honor your parents was there, even though many things they do weren't the right thing, but their intention was so nice.
And there's also this concept of respecting from a distance, even if you disagree with someone who's respectable.
And another name for respect sometimes is Shraddha, which is also faith or appreciation. Mm-hmm. And by just developing that quality, that's the beginning of, especially when you see a quality you mentioned of acting as an example of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, they'll say, well, that's a nice person. I'd like to see or hear more of them. So it goes from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha, where they'll come and hear. And then the natural quality is that they'll want to start practicing their bhajana kriya. They want to actually start this their worship of Krishna. And that gets rid of all their bad qualities that you're talking about.
It's also the position of the guru is acharya, to act in a way that brings out people's faith by seeing God through him. Because, you know, like when they first, the first devotees in New York in the 60s, 65, 66, they saw Prabhupada, they used to think, there must be a God, because this person is so incredible, whoever he's meditating on is empowering him to come to this level of consciousness. So they saw God through Prabhupada and built faith.
Saksahari Twaina.
We got some comments here.
Ah, thank you.
Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Or maybe she's repeating what you said. She's been amazed by that, so we're going to read it again. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus, every conditioned soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. So, Bhakti and Carol just fainted after she wrote that, and now she has come back to consciousness and has a question. How is illness in devotees explained, like mental illness or behavioral illness, where the illness seems to cause them to find fault and become angry? The illness seems to cause them to treat others poorly. Illness in devotees, how is it explained?
Srila Prabhupada gave us a verse from those same prayers that we just quoted, 10.14.7. The verse he quoted next to answer that question was 10.14.8, the very next verse. You know the verse? Oh, you know the verse.
Tate nukampam sushimikshamano. Well, this...
So in that verse, Prabhupada explained it in the Nectar Devotion, that this expecting the Lord's mercy under techniques of hearing and remembering, that this verse should be the guide for all devotees. He says no one should expect immediate relief from all material difficulties, but if he continues to go on offering sincere obeisances from the core of his heart, then liberation becomes his rightful claim, mm-hmm. Dayabak. And Prabhupada said that as long as one's in a material condition, there's always going to be some difficulties. However, when by practicing devotional service, beginning devotional service, it means no more birth, and then there's no more problems. So it's other than that, we could enter into a karma mimamsa type of mentality where, because I'm doing devotional service, Krishna has to take away all these different things, and because he's a little slow in doing it the way I wanted him to do, mm-hmm. The mentality changes. So that, as we were talking earlier about the humility and the humble in every situation, just like we talked about humbled, which one can, when he accepts it, it's a very deep emotion. In fact, in the Bhagavatam, it mentioned that this humbleness, the humility of the pure devotee, puts him in trance. And in that trance, everything about Krishna consciousness is revealed through the trance of humility. So it's not a simple little thing. This is, what are you in for? Huh? What are you serving to? There's something that takes place when this happens. And when it happens, you'll see a change in the person. Maybe read that verse too, 10.14.8.
Well, I want to comment on that also.
Okay.
I've been thinking about this, not about mental illness, but this weekend I'm teaching two forgiveness workshops. And one of the most difficult things to deal with in a situation like that is if someone has been physically abused or sexually abused. And you know, we say, this verse says that whatever happens to a devotee, the devotee thinks, I'm only getting a small token of what is due to come to me, and I should have gotten worse. So when one has a traumatic experience, and then we explain to them that, well, actually you should have gotten worse and you deserve this, it makes the trauma much worse, much more difficult to deal with. And so it's a similar to this question. How does one deal with that when something like this happens? And I think there are many ways.
Could I have one little point, or you almost...
I'm not even starting. Right, I'm sorry, just getting warmed up. There are many possible ways, and I've heard some of them from people who've been in this situation. And I'll give you one example, which is quite amazing. This girl was molested by a boy, or raped. Maybe it was even her boyfriend, I don't know. But what happened was, as a result of it, she had two realizations. I think one realization was just how she allowed herself to get into that situation. And the second realization was how much that boy was suffering to do that. And she started feeling this incredible compassion for him. That activity awakened compassion in her heart, and it doesn't seem to make sense. It seems unlikely that could happen in a situation like that. You would think she would...
Where's Krishna in that?
Krishna is there in that, bringing that situation to her, because that's what she needed at that time to wake up. According to her, she said, I needed that. It was a wake-up call. There was another similar situation. I asked a counselor. I said, you know, how do we deal with child molestation when we're talking about forgiveness? Are there certain things that are unforgivable? She said, actually, she was molested as a child. And she said she prayed to Prabhupada to understand why this happened. And he came in a dream, in a dream it was revealed that she, in her past life, had done that to her mother, and roles were reversed. Then just this morning, I was talking about this with another devotee, and this devotee said, I was molested as a child. She said, but I made the decision not to allow that to stop me from what I had to go on to do in my life, not to hold me down. And then I was just reading yesterday about some people who have the realization, it's not what you would normally think. They had the realization that when they were victimized, that they were put into that situation to heal something in them. They had to go through that to heal something in them. And another person has a realization that I'm meant to go through this and come out of it so I can help others who have gone through it come out of it. So that's just like four or five different ways of people dealing with something as traumatic as child molestation and seeing something that there was to learn or teach about it. So the same thing with mental illness, you could also use that as an excuse. Well, I have mental illness and that's why I become upset, or you know, and you could also say, well, I have mental illness, so I have to try harder. Krishna wants me to try harder because it's more difficult. Or I can help other people who have the same mental illness become devotees and deal with their anger issues and stuff. I mean, there's so many ways to deal with it. If you take it as Krishna's using me for some reason, I have a particular weakness, and sometimes when I have a particular weakness, I like to deal with that and then teach it because I feel I'm now qualified because I had the problem so bad. And you find that amongst very successful counselors, they come from some of the most dysfunctional backgrounds because they had such bad upbringings. They had to do so many things to stabilize their life that they go on to teach others because they feel empowered to do that. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think it relates some way to that. You wanted to say something?
Well, I just have a formula that I use. I adapted it from a math statement. It was called Occam's Razor. And in Occam's Razor, if there's many different solutions to a problem, the one that is accepted is the easiest one. So I change one to, I call Prabhupada's razor, that if there's many different ways to view this problem and what to do, in the one that gives the most encouragement for me to become a pure devotee, a lover of Krishna, and sees the most glorification and truth in there, how like Geiger counters, you know, how much quantity of the glorification of Krishna is in this explanation, to me, that's the one I always look for. And I notice with Prabhupada, that's why Prabhupada's razor, when whatever he would do, everything gave you encouragement to, I have to become a pure devotee soon. There's an urgency here. And everything until that time is, there's something fundamentally deficient in not doing it in Krishna consciousness, because you get the death sentence. There must be
everything. So you're saying you can use everything. You can see how everything is meant to push you.
Yes, and there was that one time that person asked me to look at my watch and tell me who the manufacturer is. So I looked at the manufacturer and I said, it was Casio. And he said, what time is it? And I said, I don't know. I said, well, you just looked at your watch. How do you not know what time it is? So I wasn't looking for that. I was looking for the manufacturer. So we see what we're looking for. So if you're looking for the good qualities in other, if you're looking to see how Krishna is interacting with each living entity, if you, so for, as we were talking about before, the doctor, this kind of wrap up, when you see the urgency, you see what required. Sometimes I think we have a diseased heart. We have a material heart which is causing us to die fairly soon. But if we could have this heart transplant where we could put in a Prabhupada quality heart, then you would live, you would continue to live. However, because it's foreign to this body, you have to take your anti-rejection medicine so you don't, the body doesn't reject this new heart, which is our sadhana. So there's a daily requirement to report it in, to take your medicine of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, these nine processes. And Prabhupada set this up as an expert doctor to do these things, because there's, let's say there's three modes of nature. You get pick two.
What time
this
is it?
This is sadhana.
What time is it?
9:08.
It's 9:08.
We're too late.
I don't have a watch. Yeah. My watch fell out. We have to,
thank you.
We want to read what Mitra says.
Oh, yeah.
I like how you commented that by looking at Srila Prabhupada, people built faith. That is very true, but the opposite is true. But if we are disrespectful to devotees, especially non-devotees, who we are trying to preach to, we are acting unsober. We make people doubt Krishna and the Gita because we are representing Krishna, but we don't act saintly, respectful. So being respectful is very important. Yes, it's a very good point. If we can't be respectful, we can at least try to be respectful to others for Krishna. Yes. I think it's anyone who has deeply ingrained within their heart the spirit to give Krishna to others, or if we can't ingrain that spirit in our heart, we'll always be conscious, or we'll tend to be more conscious of how we're interacting with other people, because we'll always be aware that how we interact with them will build faith or destroy faith. And those who represent Krishna, their whole service is to build faith in people.
And if you like them, it's easier.
Yeah,
like the more them. People you can like, the better it is. Yeah, that's that true. You'll be respectful. So
yeah, like people, yeah.
But they're all Krishnas.
You know, they all belong to Krishna. You should like them. Prabhupada's servant once said, after Prabhupada had a darshan, he was dealing with people, and everybody was loving Prabhupada. And he said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, everyone loves you. And Prabhupada said, that's because I love everyone. But for
Adira,
us...
Adira, the six Goswamis, yeah. Popular both.
For us, we have within our heart a mission that Prabhupada has given us, which is to in some way influence others to come closer to Krishna. That's the way I see it. You know, everybody is standing a certain distance from Krishna, and as devotees, our position is that somehow or other we could push them or pull them a little bit closer. That's what preaching means. That could be giving them something, some prasadam. It could be giving them a smile, whatever. In some way, they appreciate us, and then they.
If the mirror is clean, it'll reflect. So as the mirror becomes cleaner, you're thinking about Krishna, you'll be reflecting more and it'll be brighter. So everybody will see Krishna's qualities in you.
So, Bhakti and Carol has comments. Continue chanting and hearing, expecting the Lord's mercy, can use illness experiences to help others. Mm-hmm. See how everything is to help you. Look for the good qualities, see how Krishna's working. I think it's really nice. There's so many people who've come out of very difficult situations, and it's all, if we do that, or we tolerate difficulties, then that glorifies Krishna. Our behavior glorifies Krishna that way. Bhagavatam 10:14:8, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances with heart, words, and body. And where's the rest of the verses? It says he inherits your kingdom. He becomes the rightful inheritor of Krishna consciousness, of your mercy. So another aspect of this verse is to see that everything is arranged by Krishna for our ultimate good, and that the idea of, I don't know if many of you have heard this, the idea of living in the present is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become its rightful claim. Living in the present, Buddhism is big on this mindfulness, living in the present. So what does that mean? It means the present is what I'm dealing with now. This is what I'm dealing with. Living in the past is being affected by negativity from the past. And living in the future is fear of what could happen. So this is what Krishna has given me, so now I have to use it.
So how's it different than what the Buddha says? What you're just that Krishna's given it to you?
That you well, the idea in Buddhism is don't allow fears to. I mean, in other words, in the Buddhist, you want to have this meditation, so you have to. Unless you're in the present, your mind is agitated. It's agitated by what could possibly happen in the future. It's agitated by the negative things that are happening in the past, which now you're allowing to affect you in the present, because the past only exists in your memory of it. So by your memory of it, you're being disturbed. So if you just exist with the present, like the examples given, if there's some disaster, you focused on solving it, so now you're in the present. You don't think about the future, you don't think about the past. So this is what Krishna has given us now, so we do the best with it.
Could I share one more point on that one? I had to...
Only one.
Okay. It was progression that I made from having a problem. It was a problem. Then it was changed to a challenge. Ahai tu kirpatiyata 1:2:6 is that the challenge is to remain unmotivated in material motivation and uninterrupted in your remembrance of Krishna. And then from...
Unmotivated?
Uninterrupted.
In material motivation?
Yes. In other words, in that verse is 1:2:6 is that the supreme occupation for all humanity is by which you develop loving devotional service. Such devotional service has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So that's our challenge to deal with this world, is not to be interrupted, to maintain uninterrupted pure devotional service. Then from there you start to think, well, this is the opportunity to apply this, what I've learned in Krishna consciousness, because it's theoretical until you apply it, then it becomes your practice. So this person who's come into your life with one situation or another, they're not the actual karma for you, they're just delivering it. Like when you get a bill, a credit card bill, it's not the postman's your enemy because he brought you this bill. You already bought it. So these other people, they're bringing you something that you have to deal with. So you don't exactly see that person as your enemy. You see him as the postman delivering it. So then you get to practice what you've learned in the Bhagavad Gita without, how can, you know, I can tolerate anything except something that's hard to tolerate. I can resist anything except temptation. So there has to be practice. So whatever it is, so the next point is that Krishna has put this in my life today at this minute, your immediacy, that here it is, Krishna has arranged this. And then from there, you can recognize how love gives such attention to detail that Krishna is doing this. The opposite of love isn't hate, it's nothing, it's apathy. So Krishna has put this in my life right this minute for me to deal with, to practice what I've learned, and then you can go into a nice introspective emotional meditation, how wonderful Krishna is that he's with you right now. Krishna is always with us, always setting these things up. It's not that if we forget him, he forgets us. He's always there arranging everything. So now you're remembering him, seeing him setting this up so you can practice it, so you can come back to Godhead very quickly. So when you feel all that wonderful emotion that Krishna is in your life right now with this problem for your training, just like if you were in a gym and you told your personal trainer, today it's real easy, everything's nice and light, what will the trainer say? Put more weights on. Oh, but now it's hard again. He says, well, you have to get strong to overcome resistance. So here's the opportunity. Krishna's done it with love. And then there's a word like udipan, where you can get a stimulation for remembering Krishna. So you can take it from etavadeva jignatvam, search it out up to Krishna, to the an emotional remembrance of how Krishna is in our life right this minute, coming through this other person who isn't actually my enemy. This other person is only acting this way to deliver something I've already purchased in the past. And I can offer respect to Krishna by remembering that. And remember 10.14.8 and all the other verses keep coming in, because then you're Yasha Devi Prabhaktir. You're remembering.
Hare Krishna. Okay, that's all recorded. And it's going to be on the site, because I know you didn't get that all the first time. It may take you a few times to get that, but I think what he's saying is that whatever is happening right now is happening out of Krishna's love to elevate us. Thank you all for attending. Pallavi, Carol, Mitra, Lovananda, Bhakta Greg, and everyone else out there, Spiritual Warrior. Yes, we have cookies right here. Spiritual Warrior wants us to give out cookies. We're giving them out to you right here. They're transcendental. Unless you have eyes, you won't be able to see them. And by continuing coming to our classes, you will get the transcendental eyes to see these spiritual cookies.
And thank you for allowing me to say a couple things. I don't know, it's a little unusual, but...
Okay.
If you ever do want to write to me, though, I have an easy email, madan108@gmail.com.
Okay, we'll put that down. madan108@gmail.com. Great. Okay, thank you. Smile on the camera. Smile. Hare Krishna. See you next week. Hare Bol.
And we're off or what?
Yeah.
I had fun. Thank you.